Well, lack of profits is never the problem. Lack of profits is a symptom of not running your business on all five cylinders. So if you don't have the right people in place and you're the owner doing everything and you have your fingers in every pie and you're doing everything and you're putting out the fires and you're managing and you're doing this and this and this and this, guess what? You're not going to be very profitable.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a great review wherever you can do that.
Is your small business returning a profit? Well, here's a podcast that I think can help with that. Have it on while you're working or in the car. This is a business podcast that provides actual value for operational companies like yours. The Bo Knows Small Business is a podcast that features people that have a passion and a purpose for changing the way things are, who have decided to pursue their dreams. We talk entrepreneurship, branding, coaching, and any aspect of passion, purpose, change the world mindset, and positivity, all as it relates to small business. You want to grow and sell your business. So how do you do that? How do you grow and sell your business? And you got this in your mind and you got a passion, but you're figuring you may need to sell it someday. This person here is, am I doing this right? Here. The USA's number one, I did it right, closer, Michelle, I got to say your name right. Seiler Tucker, right? Did I get it
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Michelle Seiler Tucker.
Welcome to the show, Michelle. Good to have you back.
Thank you for having me on. It's good to be here.
It's the second time you've been here.
It is.
Last time was June of 2021. That was right before your Exit Rich book was going to be released. That same month, I think we did it, right before that. Let me ask you how that book is doing.
It's doing great. Exit Rich became a Wall Street Journal bestseller and a USA Today bestseller. And it is in all the Hudson stores, in 99 different Hudson stores throughout all the airports. It's won a lot of bestseller categories on Amazon and is up for a bunch of different awards. And you know, the most important thing to me is what the clients say about Exit Rich. And
what do they say?
Well, we're having so many great testimonials, so many great case studies. We have a pharmaceutical company that actually printed out the digital download because we were emailing a digital download before the hardcover launched. And we sent him the digital download. He printed it out on Ledger, and he gave each chapter to his team members and say, look, do whatever she says to do in this chapter. And there are six P's. We talked about the six P's in Exit Rich. And he gave each chapter, each person in charge of that one P. So the person in charge of human resources people got the people one. And the one in charge of manufacturing and all that got the product chapter. So that was a good case study. We had a media company that said they've been in business for 20, 25 years. And they didn't know half the stuff in the book. Now that they know it, now they know what to do, and they're planning for a 3-year exit.
So you're a celebrity.
I don't know about a celebrity, you know.
Well, I'll say it. I can say that.
You can say whatever you want. It's your show.
Yeah, I know. But if you're getting all the, if all of that is happening, then you certainly are a celebrity in some circles, anyway. If you want to say it that way. Now, one of the things that we talked about first time around, and I'd like to go on this again, is the five different types of buyers. I mean, you had that. We talked about that before.
Yeah.
It's in your Exit Rich book. And before you get to that, I want to say that there's an audiobook version of Exit Rich now. Is that right?
Yeah, so the audiobook version just released on May 1st. And it is available for the month of May, but don't wait. Go get your copy today for $2.99, which is less than a cup of coffee at Starbucks.
It is less.
And then, yes, it's much less. And so you get the audio version, 350 pages read to you, plus all the supplements that come with that. Plus you also get the lifetime membership into Exit Rich Book Club, where you get access to all the documents we've created to operate your business, like sample employee handbooks, policy and procedure manuals, non-competes, employment contracts. To sell your business, we have sample prospectuses, letter of intent, purchase agreements, due diligence checklists, closing documents, and more. And these documents are worth over $50,000. So if you don't go out there and get your audio version for $2.99, you're missing out because it is the best value of all time.
So you go get the book and then you go get a coffee at a local convenience shop instead of Starbucks. And then because it amounts to the same amount of money spent, and you'll be rewarding yourself. So Michelle, I'm really curious to hear your viewpoint on this again, the five different types of buyers, if we can go through that.
Sure.
At your leisure.
So I always, you know, let me just give a little bit of background here. I always tell my clients, because I have lots of prospective sellers call me and say, Michelle, I want to sell my business. I already have the buyer. You just need to represent me with that one buyer. And I'm always like, no. And they go, what do you mean no? And I say, no, because I'm going to have to go in there and evaluate your business. I'm going to have to evaluate it on the six P's, which is people, product, processes, proprietary, patrons, and profits. You're not going to operate in all six P's. Most companies don't. So we're going to have to strengthen your weakest P's, eliminate some bottlenecks. We're going to have to get your financials in order. We're going to have to set up a data room. It's a lot of heavy lifting for one buyer, and there's no guarantee that that buyer is going to buy your business. So we do all this heavy lifting. That buyer falls apart. You have no backup buyers. So you always want to make sure that you want to have backup buyers, because how can you create a bidding war and maximize value with a party of one? You can't. You need backup buyers. So there's five types of buyers. So I always say no to these clients. However, I did say yes to a seller last week. He's like, look, Michelle, I got the buyer. He says, this company is not going to be really sellable to anybody else. He's selling to his number one customer that has 65% of his revenue. Now, that's a slippery slope. You got to be very careful. So I am representing him. But the five types of buyers, number one, are first-time buyers. And first-time buyers are typically 97% of all buyers in America. They buy small businesses. They buy coffee shops and restaurants and pizzerias and fitness clubs, etc. They don't buy multimillion-dollar companies because they don't have the cash flow. And so then you have turnaround specialists. These turnaround specialists buy distressed assets. They turn around and fix them up. They're not going to give you a lot of cash. They're not going to pay, you know, they're not going to maximize your value. They're going to pay for probably pennies on the dollar. They might structure that as an earnout or structure that as seller financing or something like that because they want to mitigate their risk. That's a turnaround specialist. You only sell a turnaround specialist if you're in trouble. And then the third type of buyer are private equity buyers. And private equity buyers are really, really good buyers. They buy based on two platforms. They buy based on, two methods. One is platform, one is an add-on. So let's say that a private equity group wants to get an electrical company. They won't even look at an electrical platform unless it has at least $3 to $7 million in EBITDA. Some start at $7 million, some start at $3 million. But if they're already in that space, like we're selling an electrical company right now between, you know, $45 and $50 million, if they're already in that space, then they'll buy what's called an add-on because it's a synergistic purchase. So they either buy platforms or add-ons. And when I look at an add-on, they'll look at businesses under $1 million in EBITDA. Then you have number four type of buyers. These are strategic / competitors. So let's say that you have an electrical company and an HVAC or a plumbing company is a great strategic fit. And that's what's happening right now. Electrical companies are buying HVAC and plumbing, or vice versa, HVAC is buying electrical and plumbing. That's a strategic buy because they want that customer base so now they can do HVAC work. Now they can do plumbing work, you know, even sometimes commercial construction gets involved. So that's a strategic buy. A competitor is a direct competition to you. Or they could be competing in a different state. So they're not really a competition, but they're in the same industry. So usually strategic and competitors are really good buyers because they're buying synergies that they currently don't have, and they need them to catapult their current businesses to the next level. Examples would be a management team. You know, electrical company that we're selling right now has five project managers. You know, it's hard to get good people these days. So a lot of buyers are looking to acquire teams. You know, another thing would be processes. If they really have streamlined processes, and the business is scalable and sustainable without the owner, mm-hmm. then they would pay more for that. The other big thing is proprietary. Companies will pay a lot more for contracts, especially if they're transferable. They'll pay more for patents, trademarks, databases, their client base. You know, if they're trying to get in to a large company, like we once sold an oil manufacturing company, and they had 65% of their revenue tied up with BP. Well, most buyers were scared of that because most buyers don't like customer concentration. But I found a buyer that had similar products and services but different, and they had been trying to get in BP for decades and could never get their foot in the door. So this company outbid everybody else and paid $15 million for a business that was appraised at $9.8 million for 70% of the company, which is about 165% more than what the business evaluated. So strategics and competitors typically would pay you a higher multiple because they're buying those synergies. And then the last type of buyer is the sophisticated entrepreneur. You know, the sophisticated entrepreneur, I call them storm chasers because they're industry agnostic and they chase EBITDA.
Okay, wow. That is some wisdom right there. I just let you talk. I mean, those are some great sound bites, Michelle.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're good. I want to ask you a question. You say you go in, you evaluate a business before you put a number on it. You go in, you walk around with the CEO or whoever, the owners, and get an idea of what it's about. Do you also suggest process improvement before you give a number? Do you do that as well?
You know, it's part of when we evaluate a business, we use several different approaches. We, you know, look at discounted cash flow, look at the asset approach, the market approach, the sold approach. We look at the 6P approach. And we're really evaluating businesses on the 6Ps. And if the owner is heavily involved in the business, then we heavily suggest for them to bring in a manager, bring in an operations person, get them trained up, or they're not going to be able to sell 100%. They're going to have to retain some equity and stay on for 2 to 3 years. So we'll go through the 6Ps and make recommendations based upon their strongest and weakest Ps. We're selling an agriculture business right now that has several different divisions, one being transportation, trucking, because they moved their produce, and they have no policies and procedures and SOP checklists for that division. So I had to tell the owners, hey, you guys got to go get the processes and SOPs for this department, because buyers are going to walk in, they're going to want to conduct due diligence, they're going to want to look at your SOP checklist, your policy and procedures, your employee handbooks, your employee contracts, and your non-competes. They're going to want to look at all of that.
You mentioned the 6Ps. You did go over that earlier, but let's go into maybe a little bit of detail on what those 6Ps are, because it sounds like that's one of the most important aspects of
because the reason why it's so important is because when business owners come to me all the time and say, Michelle, I'm not making any money. I have a lack of profits. And I just met with a CPA yesterday. It's got a pretty decent-sized company. And she says, but we're not profitable. Well, lack of profits is never the problem. Lack of profits is a symptom of not running your business on all 5 cylinders. So if you don't have the right people in place and you're the owner doing everything and you have your fingers in every pie and you're doing everything and you're putting out the fires and you're managing and you're doing this and this and this and this, guess what? You're not going to be very profitable. Because you're not duplicatable, it's not sustainable, and you certainly can't scale that. So you got to have the right people in the right seats, and you got to ask the who questions: who opens the door, who handles customer service, who knows, you know, quality control, legal, accounting, manufacturing, distribution. The list goes on and on and on. The clue is that you don't want to be the one doing the who. What happens here is many entrepreneurs, don't get offended with me because I've done it myself, where we have created ourselves a glorified job, you know, that we go to work at every day versus a business that actually works for us. And then we say we're entrepreneurs, we have quality of life and financial freedom, when in reality, you don't.
No.
So you don't build a business, you build people, and people build the business. And I just did that the other day in my company, and I own multiple businesses. The other day I created a whole new platform. And you know what I said? I said, oh my gosh, I just created myself another job.
Wow.
So people is number one. Product is number two. Product is your product, your service, your industry. And you got to look at your product, your service, and your industry and ask, is it thriving or is it dying? I mean, during pandemic, the hospitality industry took a huge nosedive, especially the restaurants, because think about this. All businesses should have congruent revenue streams. You should all have additional profit centers. So if one profit center dies, you're not out of business. And that's what happened with the restaurant industry. The restaurant industry has one profit center. They get paid when you come in and eat or when you take food to go. That's it.
Right.
They don't have e-commerce. They don't have private label products. They're not selling cookbooks. They're not doing wine classes. There's so many ways to build congruent revenue streams in the restaurant industry, and they're not doing that. So you have to have multiple revenue streams. If you don't and something happens, it's like me. I own multiple companies. So if one company is down for a year, guess what? I still have paydays because I own other companies. You know, and in processes, you got one of the biggest issues with businesses and why they're not sustainable, why they're not scalable, and why they're not sellable is because people is one thing, but you have to have the processes to drive productivity. You have to have the processes that run the people versus the people running the processes. Does that make sense?
Perfect.
And you have to really step back and look at your business. Because many companies have lost market share due to Amazon and due to this pandemic. You got to sit back and look at your company and ask yourself, what do I want my clients to experience? Even better, go ask your clients, because what you think your clients want to experience when doing business with your company is probably nowhere what you think. And it's kind of like the McDonald's brothers. When they started McDonald's in 1940, guess what they did? They said, we want to develop a fast food restaurant, we want to develop fast food processes, but we're going to develop our fast food system around the customer's experience. We want our customers to experience great tasting food that's hot, fast, 30 seconds or less. They did that in 1940s. Yes. It's the same. You can go to McDonald's anywhere in the world and get the same experience. And then number four is proprietary. This is what strategics and competitors and private equity groups buying add-ons will pay a higher multiple for. And this is, you know, the more well-branded you are, Chris, the more we can sell your company for, as long as your brand is relevant in the mind of the consumers. Nobody's paying money for Blockbuster. Nobody's paying money for Toys R Us. They're not. But the largest brand in the world is, the most valuable brand, in the world is, do you know?
Amazon?
Perhaps? Amazon's in the top 10. It's not the largest. It's the other A.
Apple.
And
that's because of branding. Let me just make a
comment. That's what we're talking about. It's branding. Apple brands everything.
Branding. Yeah. Steve Jobs had that image. Now, Samsung and the Galaxies and Androids, the technology is kind of the same. But they don't have that brand image that Apple has.
No, they don't. And they don't have near the client base that Apple has. They don't. There's so many more Apple users all around the world than there are Samsung users. And so the brand alone is worth $289 billion. That's just for the brand, Chris. That's not counting inventory or real estate or cash flow or anything else. That's the brand alone. So build your brand, build your value. Trademarks are huge. You know, it makes me laugh because so many business owners, and I used to do this too. So when I'm saying something to you, I probably did it too. But business owners will come up with a company name. We get all excited. We go to GoDaddy. I have GoDaddy on my phone. And we get the .com. And then what? We get the .com. And we're like, yes. And then we go file the register that trademark in the state that we reside in. So if you reside in Texas, you get that registered mark, but you're doing business all over, you really need to check the federal database before you settle on a name, and you want to make sure that name's available, number one. Number two, you should get that name trademarked. Get that name trademarked, because you could be in business 5, 10, 15 years, and all of a sudden receive a cease and desist letter. You might win in court, but you're probably going to lose. So spend $1,000, get that federal trademark, and protect your IP. Also on products, Chris, if you've got, you know, we have a company that's got a bunch of different products, and each product has a federal trademark, and each product is exclusive. They're really almost the same products, but one's exclusive. That name's exclusive to TJ Maxx. One's exclusive to Walmart. One's exclusive to Target. So you want to go out and make sure that that's all licensed. And then patents are huge. You know, we sold a company for $18 million because they had 18 patents, and they were profitable, but they were not real profitable. And then contracts. I told you about the oil business where the oil manufacturer company overpaid by 165% because he wanted that BP contract. But here's the mistake that business owners make. They don't have the transferability clause in their contracts. 98% of all sales are asset sales. And so if the buyer refuses to do a stock sale, guess what, Chris? You're marching over to your clients and you're asking your clients, please sign here. And that's a transfer of consent. Consent to transfer the contract to the new owner. And guess what? If you have a lot of clients, you have a media company that has 3,000 clients on reoccurring subscription. Are you going to go to all 3,000 clients? And also, when you start going to your clients, now they know your business is for sale, and what happens if that buyer drops out? So be proactive here. Databases are huge. We have a company, well, if you look at Facebook, Facebook bought WhatsApp for $19 billion. Not because of their EBITDA, because they had no earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, because they were hemorrhaging. But guess what they had? They had a billion users. A billion. And so the last thing is celebrity endorsements, radio personalities. You know, someone endorsing their products, because radio personalities and celebrities can only endorse one vertical at a time. Otherwise, it's a huge conflict. So that's proprietary. That's your biggest value driver. And then you want to hold your IP in a separate corporation, because if you get sued and it happens, you don't want that person who won the lawsuit to be able to come after your assets. Yes, they could maybe close your business down, but you could still have your proprietary assets. Make sense?
Yes.
And then number five, easy, that's patrons. That's your client base. Most businesses follow the 80-20 rule, where 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your clients. That's called customer concentration. And that's called the kiss of death when you go to sell your business, because buyers hate customer concentration. They want customer diversification. And if you've been in business 15, 20, 30 years, guess what else you have? You have customers that are aging out. You have to replace those customers with new customers, which means new generations, which means they have different set of buying habits. Millennials don't buy the same way that Generational X does or that baby boomers do. And then last but least is profits. Like I said, lack of profits is never, ever your problem. It is a symptom of not operating on the other five P's.
Holy wow, Michelle.
I deserve a Coke.
I think you're on a roll today. I think you are, because this is amazing, what you've just said. This is going to be cut up into some sound bites that I'm going to air, you know, all over and above, beyond the regular podcast, because it was just awesome. I was like, okay, she's on a roll today. one of the things we talked about the first time around, I want to revisit it and maybe get more of a take on it, is the win-win. And you had said the first time that when you negotiate the sale of a business, people have this perception that there's always a loser. Now, you're in disagreement with that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 1,000%. A loser. So you're saying when a business goes up for sale, buyer's perception is that business must be a loser?
No, just somebody, they think there's always a perception that whoever, you know, at the negotiating table, there's a perception that there's...
Yes, there is a perception for that. And what I try to create is win-wins. Now, I'm not going to say that it's going to be absolutely perfect, rainbows and daisies every time, that everybody's happy, because negotiations is give and take, right? It's give and take. It's not just take, you know, or get. And so what I do is I really work on creating win-wins for my clients, because I find out what my non-negotiables are. And we talk about this in my book under the chapter of negotiating, where I talk about non-negotiables. When you really understand the five types of buyers, you begin to understand what their non-negotiables are. If you're dealing with a first-time buyer, their non-negotiables are going to be at non-compete, training, sufficient training, making sure that they own all the proprietary assets, meaning that you're not going to get the phone number, the website, or anything else like that. And they're going to really require hand-holding, you know, and those are all their non-negotiables. If you're dealing with a turnaround specialist, all they care about is getting the business for no money down and making sure they own all the proprietary assets. If you're dealing with a private equity group, they've got non-negotiables too. Most private equity groups want to buy a percentage of the business. They always want the owner to retain some equity.
Right.
So I really have studied sellers over the last 20 plus years on selling their companies, what their non-negotiables are, and then what the different buyers' non-negotiables are. So once you understand that and you're able to marry the two and have a little bit, you know, if I know my seller is non-negotiable, because I'm working with a seller right now, his non-negotiable is he won't do an earnout. 1,000% he will not do an earnout. But what he won't do is seller financing. So if I have a buyer that says 1,000% he doesn't want to buy the business without the earnout, we're going to try to bridge that gap.
Okay, earnout. Did you say earnout?
I did say earnout. So earnout is a mechanism that buyers love to use to bridge a gap on valuation or just to mitigate their risk. So if the business is selling for $40 million and it's based upon 2021 and 2022, which could be the seller's best years, because of the pandemic, they might consider this as an anomaly and want to do an earnout to bridge that gap. So an earnout is a percentage. You can structure it lots of different ways, but it's a percentage of revenue targets or gross profit targets, or sometimes I've seen EBITDA targets, which is really ignorant. You don't ever want to base your earnout on EBITDA because everybody plays with EBITDA. Everybody can manipulate EBITDA. So usually gross sales or gross profit margin is the best way to do it. And it's usually quarterly basis, usually structured 2 to 3 years. And if the business makes those targets, then the seller gets paid. But guess what? There's no guarantees there. Even if the business made those targets, there's no guarantee that the seller is going to pay you. Seller financing is structured. It's got interest. They have some guarantees that they can put in place and things of that nature. So that's the big difference. So what I do is figure out what's my top non-negotiables for my seller, what's my non-negotiables for my buyer, what do they have some wiggle room in that I can play with? Because you want everybody walking away from the closing table feeling like they won or they got as close to winning as possible.
Yeah, so it's a win-win for both sides, for sure. And that's how, and you do that quite well, obviously, because you've been doing it for a while. And that word, I'm sure, gets around, and it just grows your client base quite a lot, I'm sure, exponentially.
It works really well with my husband. And my 11-year-old daughter, too.
I love talking about that stuff. Hey, we've been going a half an hour, and it doesn't even seem like it. Last time, I did ask you what your favorite movie is. Can we repeat that? What is your favorite movie?
You know, that's tough. I've got two favorite movies that I love. Number one is The Founder, which we've already mentioned, because I love the story of the McDonald brothers, how they started McDonald's, and how Ray Kroc came in and really took McDonald's away from them. But, you know, that movie has so many golden nuggets, so many lessons in there. If you catch them all, sometimes you're going to watch it over and over and over again. My other favorite movie is called The Wish Man. And that is based upon Frank Shakeless's life. And Frank Shakeless was one of my very, very close friends. And he had a really troubled past, a troubled childhood, you know, but this Hispanic family took him in Arizona, fed him, clothed him, you know, gave him a job, gave him a place to live. And Juan, his name was Juan, I think it was Juan Garcia, and Juan says, you have to play this forward. You have to pay it forward. You have to help people. So Frank Shanklis is a police officer, and he almost died from a motorcycle accident. You got to watch the movie. But he created the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Mm-hmm. One man with a couple of officers created Make-A-Wish Foundation. why is this movie so glorious? Because it talks about his troubled past. It talks about how he paid it forward. And it talks about how he never took a penny, not one penny, from that organization. He stayed as an FBI, well, not FBI. He stayed as a police officer. He moved up the ranks. And he retired as a police officer, as a cop, with a small pension. Never took a penny from Make-A-Wish Foundation. And I think there's like a wish granted around the world. Every second, there's a wish granted all around the world. That's why that movie is so profound. I like movies based upon true stories.
Of course, yeah. Not sci-fi or whatever. Yeah, I do too. I enjoy that. I asked you this before too, but I want to hear... You
want to see how consistent I am?
There was another question. You may have already mentioned the man in the movie part, but if you were able to go back in time and visit somebody that inspired you who isn't around anymore, you could do it just one time and doesn't have to be somebody famous. Who would that be?
If it was one person I could go back and visit?
Yeah, somebody who inspired you, mentor, somebody you would like to talk to again.
This is not a mentor of mine, but this is very personal. I lost a son at the age of 3. I will go back and talk to my son.
I'm sorry to hear that. I love what you said. That's beautiful. I love it. I've never heard that. I've heard a lot of answers like that. Somebody said Jesus once. I thought that was profound.
Yeah.
Fathers, grandfathers, things like that. But they've never. You're the first one that has mentioned something about it.
Jesus would be my second choice.
What was that?
Jesus would be my second choice.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was an entrepreneur friend of mine. He was into that. Michelle Seiler Tucker, USA's number one closer. You want to grow your business, you want to sell your business for the maximum amount that you can possibly get. This is the woman to talk to. Again, what is the promotion for the Exit Rich audiobook?
So the Exit Rich audio, everybody's been asking me, Chris, for the last year, when are you coming out with audio? When are you coming out with audio? I mean, I came out with the hardcover, but no, when are you coming out with audio? So audio was released May 1st, only in the month of May. Can you buy the audio version, Exit Rich? You can get it on Amazon, Audible. You can get it Apple, Barnes & Noble. But it just came out May 1st, and we are selling it for $2.99. Less than a cup of coffee, less than a Happy Meal at McDonald's, a quarter pounder with cheese. I mean, less than a candy bar these days. And for that $2.99, you get to become a lifetime member of the Exit Rich Book Club, where you have access to all of the documents, video content, training, everything else under Seiler Tucker Academy for $2.99. You must go out and get your audiobook today.
Perfect. Seiler Tucker Academy. Now, you just inspired another question. Tell us about that. What is that?
So, Seiler Tucker Academy is a site that we developed for Exit Rich. And it is a site where we upload all of the documents that we've been using for the last 20 plus years. It cost me probably over $50,000 to recreate. Seiler Tucker Academy also has video content about things like the 6 P's, why 8 out of 10 businesses don't sell, the 10 mistakes business owners make. So it has a lot of video content training and a lot of documents to upload. And then it's got quizzes. So you could go to Seiler Tucker Academy and take the 6P quiz and see what are your strongest P's, what are your weakest P's. You can also go there and take what type of business do you own. And Seiler Tucker Academy is hosted on our main site, SeilerTucker.com. And then also follow us on social media. Listen to our podcast, Exit Rich. I just interviewed the founder of Snap Fitness, who didn't just sell it once, Chris. He sold it twice. He sold Snap Fitness the first time for $40 million. The second time he sold it for $30 million. $70 million between two sales of Snap Fitness, and he still retains some equity.
Wait a minute. He sold it and then bought it back?
No, he sold a portion of it. He sold 40% the first time for over $40 million. The second time he sold, I want to say, 60 or 70% for $30 million. And he has a lot of other brands that he owns. Oh, he's unbelievable. So make sure you listen to our Exit Rich podcast. Because what we do on Exit Rich is we interview billion dollar exits.
Okay. That's the way to go. Michelle Seiler Tucker, thank you so much for your time today. I always do this to my guests. Live long and prosper. Can you do this with your hand?
Oh, I can't if I do no. that. No? Yeah. What I do is this.
That's just as effective, really. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris, for having me on.
My pleasure.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a great review wherever you can do that.
Thank you for listening to the Beau Knows Small Business. This is a podcast that provides real value for operational companies like yours. You will hear wisdom from people that have passion and purpose for changing the way things are and have decided to pursue their dreams. We talk entrepreneurship, branding, coaching, and any aspect of passion, purpose, change the world mindset, and positivity, all as it relates to small business. Until next time.